welcome to the Drive Podcast. Ted Henley is off for a couple of days. I'm your guest host, Jalen Nye. We have some great conversation on our show today, so let's get right into it.
Dr. Paul Parks is the president of the Alberta Medical Association Section of Emergency Medicine. Dr. Parks, welcome to the show.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
I'm guessing that the results from this survey, not necessarily a surprise to you.
No, not a shocker at all. Just kind of clarifies what, from the patient perspective, what we've been seeing and on the front lines and what we've been talking about for the last, months, if not the last year. It just confirms what the patient perspective is.
We are hearing of epic waits. We're hearing of patients, in the hallways, ERs being shut down. And it's not just an Alberta thing. This is happening across the country. Can you describe the situation for us from your standpoint?
We've hit a perfect storm, to be honest. We just weathered, a couple years of a really tough pandemic. A lot of government changes kind of have impacted as well. And now we're faced with record shortages of staffing, record volumes, complexity of patients, and the pandemic's still going. And unfortunately, we may even have another wave hitting us, and it's really challenging us. I'll tell you, on the front lines, now it's not uncommon that we're trying to work with two-thirds of the staff we normally would have for nursing, allied healthcare workers, and our volumes are 120-150%, like they're sometimes even double. And then you add closures of hospitals as big as, say, urgent care places as big as like Airdrie or that. Those patients have to go to already overcrowded departments in other areas. So it's the perfect storm, and it's extremely challenging. And like I said, we feel stressed, and we know the patients do when they're coming in to seek care as well.
Dr. Parks, I want to touch on a couple of things that you brought up there on when you talk about the perfect storm, everything that's come together to make this perfect storm. When it comes to, and you mentioned a few things there, when it comes to staffing, I've heard a number of things, not enough medical staff, and the fact that some folks just don't want to work in ERs anymore. What is it with staffing, and how much did the COVID policy about vaccinations have to play a role in that level and where we are now?
So lots went into it. The COVID vaccinations itself, I mean, AHS can give you those quotes, but that was a minuscule number of healthcare workers that didn't believe in science and want to go that route. But so that didn't have an impact. But 2.5 years of actual the pandemic and working, double shifting and working under really tough conditions definitely had a major impact on morale and burnout. And then you add the last couple of years, the government made some major changes and, have been really, kind of not treating our allied healthcare workers and our nurses and our respiratory therapists very well, not valuing them, saying that they need 10-11% pay cuts, ridiculous things like that. So it just all added together. And then now you add working in an environment after 2.5 years where everybody's really sick, there's lots of them, and you're really understaffed. It just makes every single shift even that more of a challenge, and that's why we're talking about this, so people can understand, so we can get a solution and get some help.
And Dr. Parks, you talk about the volumes, and I suspect, of course, COVID plays a role in that, but what about the fact that more and more people are showing up to the ER instead of going to a primary health care, like a GP, something like that, oftentimes because they can't find one. That's a real challenge right across this country right now.
100%. I mean, they're two separate challenges, but they are connected to a degree. The emerged department overcrowding is because we don't have space in our hospitals to admit the really sick people, and that's why we can't offload ambulances, and that's why the waits are 8, 10, 12 hours. But there's no question. There's also, I think, in that survey that you referred to, there's 46% admitted that they went to an emergency department because they felt like they had no other option.
Yeah.
That's a massive problem. Every Albertan needs to have a primary care physician in a medical home. And if we fix that, it would keep people healthier and it would decrease the workload a little bit in the emergency for sure. But they're a bit different.
Yeah, we know that the province spends a boatload of money on the healthcare system. I think, if I remember correctly, it's the largest budget out of everything. And when we talk about fixing the system, Dr. Parks, oftentimes the money aspect is something that is talked about a lot. We need more for this. We need more for that. What needs to be done to turn this ship around right now?
So that, it's a complex system, and it's a great question, 100%. The big part, though, is, you know, a lot of that, what we just talked about, why is it really important everyone has a family physician? If we can focus on primary care and preventative medicine and you know, vaccines so that we don't have people getting sick, things like that, then that's always way cheaper. So if we could really bolster that part of the system and then bolster the long-term care and home care, I'll tell you, that's the part that really affects people getting out of hospital when they're sick, is those resources. So if we can value our human resources that we have, and the government actually value them and respect them and treat them that way, and we could get home care, primary care, long-term care, all of those things really robust, then the acute care system would work a lot better. And I would just say, you know, there's discussions about, you know, increasing ICU beds and 1,000 ICU beds and things like that. You know, that's probably the last thing we ever want to, you know, invest in is more really, really expensive care. It'd be way better if we had our system working the way it's designed to do, and we could be in, you know, have robust primary care and keep people from getting sick in the first place.
And Dr. Parks, before I let you go, you know, because there's so many folks out there that don't have, you know, that primary care, they don't have their GP that they can go to, or maybe they're not aware of the health clinics that they can go to, that sort of thing. When should people be going to the ERs? What do you need to be telling them to be aware of about making that decision on where to go, and especially if a lot of them feel that they don't have any other place to go?
Oh, yeah. You know, I should make it really clear to your listeners out there. None of us in Emerge are blaming people for showing up in the Emerge department. That's what we're there for. And it's a very, very difficult decision, you know, to decide. Is that you know, stomach upset? Is that really just reflux? Or is it a chest pain because you're having a heart attack? You know, so the big thing I would say is that, you know, getting a primary care physician and working on that piece, that's talking to the government and getting help in that long term. But the flip side would be, you know, if in any doubt, you should be coming to our Emerge departments, or you should be calling 811, and you should be getting stratified to find out. And then what that means, given the way our system is right now, is just, I'd put a word out there, is that just be patient. The waits are going to be long. We will take care of you. When you get into our system, you get phenomenal care. It's just that it's going to take longer. And so that piece of fixing the system long-term, that's talking to your government and lobbying and telling them how important it is to have a family physician and access health care. And then right now, it's if at all in doubt, come to us. It's just be very patient with those healthcare workers and nurses that are on the front lines that show up, because they honestly are trying their best to keep the system afloat.
Dr. Parks, thanks for the conversation this afternoon. Sure appreciate it.
Thanks again for talking about this.
Check in with Dr. Gans Ferentz for another edition of How Does That Make You Feel? Hey, Dr. Gans.
Hey, Jalen. How you doing?
I'm doing really, really well. Dr. Gans, did you always want to be a psychologist?
That's a great question. I had so many different careers. I mean, I thought I wanted to be a preacher at one point, and then I worked as a landscaper. I taught for a while. But, I, you know, through all of that, I always, like, had this burning desire to figure out how we worked as people. Like, how we work, what helps our relationships, what helps us function well and be happy. And weirdly enough, people seem to like to talk to me. So it seemed like it was an all right choice for me to make. So
it's working out just fine for you, Dr. Gans. All right, we wanted to talk today about just some tips, some ideas on teaching good values to your kids. And I think for, you know, some people be like, hey, that seems pretty obvious, doesn't? But I think things have changed certainly a lot over the past number of years where, you know, we always hear about kids getting into trouble, but I think social media has played a big role in the way that kids are getting their information, obviously. So I think it's really important to kind of reiterate, you know, some tips to help, you know, the adults in these kids' life, you know, to remain as a positive influence. And I like this one. And you start off by saying, better you than them. What does that mean?
Well, you know, let me back up just for a second here, because you know, it's always been an issue. It's just been getting more and more of an issue over the last, you know, couple decades, where kids tend to be more oriented towards their peers than they do to their parents. And, you know, some of that is because we tend to have to work a little longer to make ends meet, different things like that. But social media and the internet generally has been a pretty big force. But then you throw in what we just went through with COVID, right? And so much of everybody's life, but especially young people's lives, have been spent online, right? And the only way to connect with people was through the technology. And it really does exacerbate that situation and really makes it that it orients them to their peers way more than what was happening before COVID, right? So what I mean by better you than them is you're going to be a better influence on your kids than, you know, other kids, right? So because it's really the blind leading the blind, right? They haven't clocked enough hours on Earth to really have the knowledge and the wisdom that you would have as a parent or a teacher or, you know, a senior person in your kid's life. And so you really want to, first of all, recognize the situation and then, you know, sign yourself up for that that task, that that challenge of being somebody who can be influential and, you know, positive role model and mentor in your kid's life.
One of the things that, you know, my husband and I were talking about on the weekend is the connection that is developing and getting stronger with our grandson. He'll be three in August, and it's been fascinating, especially over the past year, right, as he's coming into his own and that little personality is developing, and he wants to be with us and he wants to hang out with us, and that connection that is building. And, you know, we had a conversation just the other night about, you know, that important role that we as grandparents are going to play in his life and his brother's life, and how important that is, because he wants to spend time with us, and that's really cool.
It is kind of cool, right? And you know, it, like, for us old folks, it keeps us young to be around the you know, that youthful energy, and, you know, that.
Oh, come on, it exhausts us, like, Gans. Come on, it exhausts us, but we'll say it keeps us young.
it keeps us emotionally young. Let me put it that way. But you know, grandparents have an incredible role to play in many cultures. Mm-hmm. It's the grandparents that have a major role in raising the kids. I was talking to somebody the other day, and they were saying that one of their clients was saying that you know, it's weird being here. They were an immigrant that came from another country, and they said, it's weird here because I have to figure out how to raise my kids. Mm-hmm. And in my culture, my parents would raise the kids, and I'd watch them so I'd know what to do, and then I'd raise my grandkids, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, we've lost a lot of the, you know, bigger family structures in our current, like, you know, modern society, especially in North America here. But I think grandparents still play a huge role in that they can, at, you know, because of their stage in life, typically have more resources, typically have more time, you know what I mean? They can give the kids back at the end of the day. You know, it's kind of nice to be able to do that. And so it's easier for them to have more patience. They're not as overwhelmed. They have more experience, right? And so there can be a real calming effect on the children because the grandparents are around. And actually, the grandparents can even have a calming effect on the actual parents, their actual children, because they can take some of that pressure off, especially a new parent.
So that connection then, you know, it's in the quality of it and the quantity of it, you know, I know it's tough to put a time amount on there, but it's got to be quality.
Yeah, it does. It has to be both, really, because quality is important. And what we mean by quality, we've probably talked about this a few times since we've been chatting over the years, but it's, you know, it's unfettered and undistracted time. So it's time where you're focused on just them. So you put down the phone, you put down the book, you turn off the TV, you know, you do things that are with them. So focusing, having a conversation, playing a game, or even watching a movie together and that laughing and sharing that experience. But it's really just about them. One of the things that we can do as parents is, like, if we have more than one kid, is to give each kid some special time, as well as, you know, the family time of doing things together. But, like, have a special day every, you know, 6 months or so with each one of the kids so that they feel special and they have that connected time. Mm. And what happens then is you're building a foundation of trust. You're building a foundation of safety and value in the kid's mind, especially if you do this, like, start, like, early, like, age zero, right, and keep doing it. Then when they have issues, when they are unsure about what needs to happen, their values are being tested, or some other people are bringing up other things that they may not have thought about anymore, they're going to feel much more comfortable coming and asking you about it. They're going to feel much more connected to you, so it's going to be easier to say, well, I don't know, I never saw my mom or dad do that. I'm not sure if this is correct, right? And so you improve your standing in their eyes just because you've actually been around.
Yeah, and you know what? The kids are sponges, right? And as parents or grandparents, you lead, they follow, and they soak all that up, right? And when you talk about values, they see how you're living your life and what you stand for and what you believe in.
Yeah,
they're going to take that on.
Absolutely. They don't learn what we think we're teaching them. they learn what they live and what they see of us, right? And so it really is important that we walk the talk. And particularly nowadays, with so many homes being like either blended family or shared custody or different things like that, right? One of the things that we really want to do is if we want respect from our kids, we want to make sure we're holding up as much as possible the other parent, even if we're no longer married to them, right? We want to make sure we're holding that up. If it's reasonable, if they're decent people, right? You want to build them up so that there's respect for you, because you're teaching your kids to respect them, right? A lot of times we think the opposite. We think, well, we're going to have more respect if we put down the other parent, but it's actually backfiring. It's not doing you any good. It's not doing you any good.
Mm-mm. Dr. Gans Ferenc joining us with another edition of How Does That Make You Feel? We're talking about tips for teaching good values to your kids. Gans, hold the line for a second. I need to check traffic. When we come back, I want to talk about being open to input from your children and in all of this, how important that is. Stay with. Now, one of the things, though, we know that kids do their own things sometimes. They'll get in trouble. They'll sow some oats. They will push boundaries. It's important to have that input from kids and having the conversations and allowing them to grow.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, the principle is this: you give what you want to get, right? You plant the seed and hope, and it comes back to you with interest. If we want the kids to listen to us, we need to listen to them. They need to know that they have a voice in our lives. A lot of times we as parents, especially younger parents, we can kind of think that, oh no, I gotta make sure my kid knows that I'm in charge and that I'm the one with all the information and stuff like that. And they will know that. You're bigger than them. You have all the money, right? So you're okay. But it's important to give them space to express their feelings, to express what they think, and be open to hearing their thoughts on certain values or certain questions, moral or otherwise, that they bring up. And that, just by you being able to listen and hear them non-judgmentally and calmly, it means that they'll be more open to actually listening to your perspective on this. And, my kids are a little older now, but, I learned a lot from my kids. It's like, oh, I never thought of it that way. Let me consider that a little bit, right? So even us old dogs can learn some stuff from the new ones.
Non-judgmental and calmly, Gans, jumped out at me during that, because that's a whole other conversation, isn't it? It's about, actively listening. That's so important.
Well, yeah, and like you said, it's normal and actually kind of healthy that the kids do some stuff. They make some mistakes, they sow some oats, they try things new, and especially when they pass around 12, 13, 14, their job is to differentiate from their parents. They need to, psychologically understand or recognize that they're not their parents. They're their own entity. They can make their own decisions and they're different. And this is why you get the weird music, the weird haircuts, the fashion, all this other stuff, right? It's their attempt to set up their own identity. So by making room for that, we actually endear ourselves to our kids. We help them to know that we're an ally And so then they can come to us and we can be the consultants that they need, especially at certain, you know, difficult transition points in life.
Gans, love it. Great advice. Thank you for this. Look forward to next month.
Me too.
Take care, always Dr. Gans.
Hey, I'm Ted Henley. Thanks for listening to The Drive Podcast. Please tell your friends about what you're hearing. Also, please rate, review, and subscribe. This podcast, of course, is free wherever you get your favorite content. If you want to hear The Drive with Ted Henley live, then please tune in or stream the show weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on Global News Radio 770 CHQR.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.